Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you today. Homeschool father of five, raising our children out here in the eastern plains of Colorado, a safe distance from the demise of Western civilization. And we're just trying to retain some faith, family, and freedom in the 21st century. We've been losing these things for the last generation or two. But thanks be to God, we have a great heritage in this country. Now, it doesn't matter what country you live in, it's always important. It's a biblical principle to honor your fathers. If there were basic principles of righteousness and liberty, there were good principles, there were good, solid principles that undergirded some of your generation heritage, then you need to give some credence to that. And that's what we do here in this country for our generations. And we're going to be talking American heritage on this edition of the broadcast. John Adams warned posterity, "You will never know how much it costs the present generation to preserve your freedom. I hope you will make good use of it. If you do not, I shall repent in heaven that I ever took half the pains to preserve it." We have a great heritage, and we want to share a little bit of that with you today. And Larry Cernick is joining me from the Appleseed Organization, Project Appleseed. He is state coordinator for Idaho. This is a project, part of the Revolutionary War Veterans Association. Larry Cernick, welcome to the program. And Larry, I have to say that part of the heritage here is that you and I ran for governor in 1994, me for governor, you lieutenant governor, and we formed an organization called Leaders for Liberty in probably 1995, I'm thinking. So we've got a past. That's right. And you've been involved in this struggle for liberty and freedom for a long time, and I guess you're still in it. Yep. And same here. In fact, I mentioned you in my book, The Second Mayflower, and we continue to sell that product after some 18 years.
Well, there's still a good use for it, and obviously there's still demand.
Yes, and the whole idea is that we have a heritage, we have a great heritage, and we need to keep that heritage front and center for ourselves and our children, and hopefully we'll be able to retain it through the generations.
Yeah, not only do we want to retain it, we actually need to regain lost ground, I believe, and this is one of the focuses of our program.
Well, I was happy to hear that you're part of this Revolutionary War Veterans Association Project Appleseed. It's a Project Appleseed. Why don't you talk just for a moment on what the project involves?
Well, we are a nonprofit educational organization, and we teach two things. First and foremost, we teach American history, a discussion of our heritage or inheritance that is a result of what happened back in 1775 and the years following. And we couple that together with basic rifle marksmanship. And we believe that the American citizen, the American rifleman, is something that needs to be preserved and advanced in our day and time, and that it has a long and a very positive heritage in our society.
Hmm. And we're not the only nation that emphasizes this. The nation of Switzerland has as well, in a very fruitful way, over many, many, many generations.
Indeed, and the Swiss, it's very interesting to notice, have never been invaded, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's allowed for a great deal of peace and freedom for that country. But let's talk about our country. And you say that you've got an educational element here. You want to make sure that folks understand our heritage around the Revolutionary War period. Why don't you just talk for a moment about that particular war? I take it to be a legitimate war. We've had people ask the question whether it was a legitimate war. Typically, it's people from Canada and Great Britain that listen to our program that ask us about it. But give us some background on that war that we had with England.
Well, there were a series of events that led up to the firing of the first shots at Lexington on April 19, 1775. And we have to remember that the colonies were formulated as under charters by the British Crown, and there was a fairly long period of time leading up to this during which the American colonists sought to essentially establish and maintain their rights as British citizens. They had Britain had a history of this before 1775, and the American colonists essentially saw themselves as British citizens. These were being negated by the Crown, both the Crown and by Parliament, and it became very, very onerous and hard on the colonies. The British became very oppressive, And in the period of time leading up to 1775, the American colonists had sought by a variety of ways to deal with this through Parliament and other methods of publication and information, and had essentially come to a point by April 19, 1775, where there was a very strong movement for independence because the abridgments of their rights were continuous, and in fact, the British were very openly tightening the thumbscrews, if you will. Mm.
And in a real sense, these American citizens, or these citizens of England and America, were concerned that the charters were being violated. Their basic rights that would have been contained in or documents like the Magna Carta were being violated. And so it was really the mother country that was in violation of the charters and not the colonies.
Absolutely. By the time you get to 1775, why the British had basically shut down all the colonial legislatures, which were part of their charters, they'd established a quasi-military martial law. They had shut down all but a few of the colonial judicial systems. And one of the complaints of the colonists was that they were leaving them in an utter state of anarchy, no way to govern by law.
And so they were rejecting anarchy. I mean, if someone wants to accuse our forefathers of being anarchists, this is exactly what they did not want. And they organized themselves under their state legislatures.
Absolutely. Actually, when the Crown and the Parliament shut down their legislatures, what they did is they developed other legislatures and methods of representation, which led to the consolidation of a Continental Congress. And you know, they were very careful men. Anyone that wants to portray these men as being rash or you know, prone to just get excited about something without cause is in serious error. You only have to read what they wrote to understand that they were not looking to have a fight.
Yeah. And it's sad that so many Americans just have no clue of who these men were, what the issues were, and why they fought that war. So many, I'd say it's got to be 95-98% of Americans are clueless on these things, Larry.
I'm afraid that's true. We have a great deficit of knowledge about the events leading up to and the principles on which our country were founded. And on top of that, I think what we have is a sort of a malaise or sickness of the soul of the country. And so people don't understand this anymore. It's not important. It's not taught in the public schools. And you can have a whole lot of American citizens that have no idea what it means to be an American citizen. And the inheritance that was bequeathed to us by these people back in the 1700s.
Well, it certainly helps to know that your forefathers were men of very strong character, men of virtue, men who had strong Christian foundings, and men who fought illegitimate war. I think that's important. We've got to know those data points.
Yeah, one of the things that I think brings us out in the history that we present to people is the fact that the colonial militias, while they had been well organized, they were under very strict instructions to not be people that would provoke an armed confrontation. You have to put yourself in their place back at that time. And here they were a largely agronomist nation, widely dispersed. There were some fairly large settlements right on the East Coast, but even the towns about were not very big towns. And they weren't looking to go up to against the most powerful army in the world at the time. They I am sure pondered the risks as they did this, but the continued infringements that were made upon them as British citizens led them legitimately to believe that there was no stopping what that would look like.
Larry, why should we teach our children about these roots? What is important for them, for their lives, for their future?
Well, I think we can learn from the past, understand from the past. For one thing, it's important for them to know that the things that we're fighting for today in terms of liberty have deep, deep roots back to the early settlements of the colonies, to the period of the 1770s, and actually before that, the people that came over here were fleeing oppressions of various kinds and came over here to begin a nation that, where there would be justice and rights would be observed. And so it's important for our children to know and understand that. And I really appreciated the quote that you used earlier from John Adams.
I took it from your website.
Well, that's a pleasant plagiarism.
Yeah, exactly.
But I'm sure Adams wouldn't be ashamed to have us discuss that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that they were very far-sighted people looking for generations past their own. And Adams raises a very important question in that quote and essentially asks, or makes a statement and asks a question at the same time. Is this worth it? We have to remember that Adams penned that line very shortly after the Lexington-Concord conflict, and he didn't know that there was 8 years of war ahead of them. Now, how important is that for our children? Well, I think it's very important because, number one, there are so many lies and misinformation items that are spread about our American heritage that there needs to be a voice out there saying, wait a minute, let's look at what the founders themselves said. And once you understand what they have said and the structure of our nation and our governmental system, you know that these guys had some pretty good ideas about where they were going, and you understand that they meant this to be perpetuated in terms of rights and liberty to generations that would succeed them on and on. They had some very high aspirations, and they had a very good foundation. You mentioned men of Christian principle. Well, that's absolutely true. There's lots of discussion among various groups about the nature of the men that did these things. But I can tell you one thing. They weren't Hindus or Buddhists. And so whether they are completely orthodox in a way that we would define that or not, their understanding of things basically was one that was biblical. And they drew freely on that. And the colonial preachers were very, very good at educating the people and the principles that later came into play in the political system.
Yeah. Well, let's shift the discussion for a moment, Larry, to the other aspect of Project Appleseed, and that is to teach young people and older people alike how to handle guns. And now this might be a little bit of a challenge to some. Now, actually, our listening audience is more or less educated in the area of guns. We've referred to some scriptural backing, Nehemiah 4:14, and the reference where Jesus tells his disciples to get a sword. There's references in the Bible about swords and about defensive, offensive, and weaponry, and these things are not considered to be a bad thing in Scripture. But there are people out there who are afraid of guns. I mean, they're just afraid of them. You bring up the idea of guns, and suddenly you sort of get this pacifistic reaction out of them. Where does that come from?
Well, I think it's an irrational response, first and foremost. A lot of people are unfamiliar with firearms and with rifles, other types. And because they're unfamiliar with them, it seems like it's deeply cloaked in some kind of mystery. In fact, a rifle or another firearm is merely a tool. It's no different than an automobile. There are lawful and good uses for an automobile, and there are people that choose to abuse them, abuse the use of them. Same is true with firearms. Both instruments, both tools, could be used for good or bad. They could cause damage or death either way. So the real issue is not, do we vilify an object, which seems to me to be a little absurd. It'd be like saying a rock is evil.
Yeah.
But the real thing is that, we want to say, well, what is the lawful, right, and safe way to utilize these tools? And, we drive on the right side of the road in this country by convention. But the rules, safety and the use of firearms is pretty well standardized throughout the world. I think people are afraid of the responsibility that comes with things like that as well. And I understand, there's a strong pacifistic attitude in some circles. I just don't find that justifiable. I think owning and being able to utilize firearms in lawful ways is just another way in which you perhaps love your family by providing meat on the table, or you may be in a situation sometime to defend someone who's your neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting. In history, you find this shocking story about Martin Luther. Somebody told me this a couple of months ago, where, you know, he carried a sword on a regular basis. And at one point, apparently, it kind of slipped out of the holster and it hurt his foot. Somehow it cut through his foot. And so, again, here you have men in history, I mean, respected Christian men in history who carried swords. All the way through Martin Luther's time, of course, Cromwell and others and the Puritans, you have these famous pictures of the pilgrims carrying their guns to church with them. So this is not unusual in the history of Christendom. It's just the responsible use of them is critical.
One of my favorite stories about John Knox being armed in Scotland. You know, this is just not inconsistent with the history of the church, the history of Christianity in Europe and in the Western world and on this continent. There's nothing inconsistent here.
Mm. The key, though, is you're right. You've got to be willing to learn how to use these things responsibly. Now, don't be scared about them, but be willing to step up to the plate and learn how to handle them with safety and learn how to use them and when to use them. And that is a challenge. That's something that a man who is a man of character, a man who wants to protect his family, a man who wants to protect his nation, a man who wants to be a responsible citizen, a man who wants to be right in the way he handles things, he's got to learn how to do that, and that's the challenge.
Yeah, perhaps in our society in these days it's a challenge. It hasn't been that way historically, but it certainly seems to be in these days. And again, I think there's miles of difference between fear and respect. Responsibility.
Yes,
we have to make good and proper connections with those things, and it is a man's responsibility to defend his family. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
I think it's sheer cowardice for someone to assume that they would allow marauders to come in and harm his family.
And, you know, we talk about self-governance as important to the maintenance of liberty. This is one of the very most important principles that comes out of all of our founding fathers. I mean, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, you name it. If a man can't be self-governed, he will be tyrannized. That's repeated again and again. But self-governance must include things like learning how to responsibly handle guns. That's part of self-government, and I think that may be the major point on the interview here.
Yeah, self-government, if a man is ungoverned himself, that means he's given over completely to his own appetites and can't restrain himself. This is not the picture that we would like to see. As a matter of fact, I have a sermon quote, I believe it's from Samuel Langdon in about 1775, where he alleges that it's quite improper for a man not to be self-governed, that liberty is not for ungovernable people. It's for people who are, first of all, self-governed and people who care about their neighbor. So self-governance is absolutely important, just as the founders and the founding generation gave us an example of self-control in the face of great strides of oppression being laid upon them. As they belabored the point to the nth degree, when things finally broke out at Lexington and Concord, they were already well prepared. Now, part of that is it was a portion of their lifestyle to begin with. These were frontier settlements, but the major part of it, if you read the original literature and the interviews done with a number of the people that were involved on April 19th, you find out that they believed that self-governance was the principle on which being able to govern a colony or a township or a state or whatever in any way that was good rested on that very point.
Larry, Project Appleseed, you're involved, you're a state coordinator. How do you teach the responsible use of the weapon?
Well, what we do is, again, we teach rifle marksmanship, and safety is the keystone to any firearms instruction. And what we do is we drill into, if you will, our students' heads and minds the basic safety aspects of how to use a rifle. We have rules that they have to obey, and it's a good set of rules. And first and foremost, the last thing you want to do is to harm your neighbor. Why would you want to harm your neighbor? So you must learn these things in order to do so safely. Now, in conjunction, you know, safety is the jumping off point to the firearms instruction, the riflery instruction that we give. And, you know, we teach them how to, with self-control, with a disciplined application of the techniques that we teach, that we can turn someone into who is either an inexperienced shooter or an average shooter, or even a fairly accomplished shooter. We can turn them into what we call a rifleman, which is a status to be desired. To become a rifleman in our program, you have to score 210 points on a what we call an AQT target. It's a multiple target sheet of paper out there. The perfect score is 250. And a lot of people think this is easy until they try it.
Yeah.
And it's not as easy as it sounds.
What percent of those that try it can accomplish it?
The first time?
First time.
Less than 10%.
Wow.
Less than 10%. And this is taking in novices to well-experienced people as a whole. There's less than 10% of the people that come for our instruction that within the two-day course that we offer will make that rifleman score 210 in the first attempt to do it. Now, there are some, but they're the distinct minority. So this kind of shows us the one of the things we're up against here. We have a lot of people running around in this nation who are firearms enthusiasts, but they don't have a clue about fundamental marksmanship skills. So, but we can also, within the average time it takes the average attendee to score a rifleman score is about three events.
Okay.
A total of 6 days of instruction.
Now, how much do you charge for this training?
Well, what we do is for men over 21 years of age, we charge $70.
Okay.
For women, those under 20 years of age, we have only a modest registration fee, about $5.
Wow. Fantastic.
And, for law enforcement, National Guard, active military, and a couple of other categories that I can't remember off the top of my head at this very moment, they are free. We don't even charge them a registration fee. And the only other thing they have to pay is we partner up with various ranges. We presented our program to them, and if they like it, why, we make arrangements to schedule these events. And the ranges will charge a range fee that's, in our neck of the woods, it's usually $5 or $10 a day, very modest. And you can get more expensive training than what we provide. I don't think you're going to find as good a deal.
Yeah.
And
we
generally try to come where people are, where it's possible. We're always looking for new venues to do this. And I
notice you're all over the United States, including Colorado, some 25 events scheduled this year just in my state alone. So just a matter of folks going to the website and checking it out, you have these events scheduled everywhere.
Yes, all over. I don't think, except for maybe Hawaii and maybe Alaska, I think you'd be hard-pressed to not be able to find at least one or two. And in some parts of the country where the program has really taken off, there are multiple events every weekend even. So it's the program is growing. Part of our goal is to double in size every year.
Fantastic. And again, I think it's critical that everybody be involved, especially first and foremost, fathers should take a role in this. I've noticed that there are some men who are not prepared to defend their households. I mean, you get these pacifistic fathers who aren't really ready to stand up and defend their households. And I think what you get is sort of a spiritual and physical anemia with these dads. And I think one of the very first steps a dad has to take to be a dad is just to be prepared to defend his household.
Yeah, what would we say about a man that wouldn't provide for his family?
Yeah.
We wouldn't be very complimentary about that.
Yeah.
It carries over into this area as well.
Mm-hmm.
The father, husband, father, is to be a protector.
Yeah.
He's to be a lover of his family.
Yeah.
And if he won't give them food, and if he won't try to protect them physically, you almost have to ask the question, what good is he?
Yeah, and that's the kind of message I think the Bible's sending us when Lot is tossing his, you know, daughters out to the bad guys. There's a few bad examples in Scripture, but there are some good examples, like Nehemiah encouraging the men to stand up and defend their households in Nehemiah 4:14. But let's talk a little bit about the gals. You said that you have training for the ladies as well. Why should our daughters learn to shoot?
Well, for the simple fact that men are not everywhere.
Yeah.
Their fathers or their husbands are not everywhere. We have no interest in turning women into warriors or anything like that. But the fact of the matter is, a good many of our people, our population, still live in very rural places. And if they don't, they live in urban places, which might be more dangerous.
Yeah.
We don't have any control of the events and decisions of others.
Yeah.
And so we cannot predict, we cannot make an appointment for some form of difficulty.
Yeah.
It only makes sense. And the women also have quite a long heritage of being involved. Well, they were not fighters in 1775. They produced a whole bunch of the stuff that was used by the men who did fight. And our society is quite a bit more dispersed than it was then, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, so it only makes sense, I think, very good sense, to teach your daughters and wives how to handle a rifle, how to handle other firearms.
And boy, was I thankful my daughter Rebecca knew how to shoot last December when she took down a deer right outside of our door here in Elizabeth, Colorado, and we've been enjoying venison ever since. Not everybody gets a tag in Colorado, and thankfully Rebecca pulled a tag last year, and we've been enjoying the meat.
But we have a bit more of abundance up here, so you have to purchase a license, but we have a lot of whitetail in this area, and as a family, we're usually relatively successful ourselves. So, not only from the self-defense standpoint, but we just cannot predict the future, and a lot of this, I'd like to liken to having a spare tire. It's something that you really appreciate it when it's there,
yeah,
and when you need it. And if it's not there, you have a problem.
And Larry, I have to say that I love being somewhat self-sufficient. I like to be able to cut my own wood, burn my own wood. We like to have a few chickens out back, so we get our own eggs, and we like to occasionally go shoot our own venison. We took that deer all the way from the field to the table. We did every little piece of it ourselves, including grinding the meat. We just like to be able to be self-sufficient in a society where everybody's depending on everybody else to make things happen.
Yeah, and I'm afraid it goes beyond just sort of an interdependence. We've become a very dependent society.
Yeah.
And that's in the long run, I'm not sure that's a very good idea. I think that you end up with people who somehow can't fend for themselves. And if they can't fend for themselves, how can they provide for themselves? And if they can't provide for themselves, how are they going to be men and women of liberty?
Yeah.
And these are the elements of self-government that we've talked about on today's broadcast. Larry, we just have a second left. What's the website for Project Appleseed?
You want to go to www.appleseedinfo.org.
Appleseedinfo.org is the website, friends, for all the stuff we've been talking about on this edition of Generations. Larry Cernick, thanks so much for joining us today on Generations.
Kevin, my pleasure. Good to hear your voice.
You have been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast, my friend. If you'd like to interact with the program, email me directly at host@kevinswanson.com. You can also hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.